Welcome to Master the Start, a podcast for young professionals where we interview business experts on how you can master the start of your life in business.
What's up, everyone, and welcome back to the Master the Start podcast presented by GoMahi.com. Like always, we love that you're here, and we are so blessed to have you be a part of the Master the Start family. This week, actually, we're going to do something a little bit different. With graduation rolling around and so many students and young professionals going off into the world, I actually wanted to try something a little bit different. I wanted to give you guys little snippets of commencement speeches. And because we're dirt poor, we can't actually pay for the speeches, so I'm going to read them to you. I know that might be a little unique or a little boring, or you might just not love it. But I really thought about it for a while and made the decision that I needed to set my ego aside. And what I mean by that is I kind of accepted that in the next couple of years, I'm probably not going to be lucky enough to have Steve Jobs on the show. Actually, that's horrible because that's impossible because he passed. I'm very sorry about that. So we are not going to have a Steve Jobs on the show, and he is absolutely brilliant. So people should hear what he has to say. We're not going to have a Conan O'Brien on the show anytime soon, or a Denzel Washington. So I wanted to take this moment to actually share snippets of their commencement speeches to fellow graduate students. And I wanted to share it because I believe that is truly helpful for young business professionals. I think it's truly important to listen to what they have to say. And if you really take it to heart, it will change your career and it will help you ultimately be more successful than you ever thought you could ever be. So without further ado, welcome to this week's episode of Master the Start, and we'll get going now. So as I said, I'm going to use little snippets. I'm going to use little snippets from different commencement speeches. And I want to start with one of the best in the biz, Steve Jobs. Now, I think a lot of you guys know who Steve Jobs is, so I don't believe he needs much of an introduction. But for all of you guys that don't know who he is, essentially Steve Jobs, he was the individual that created the Mac. He also created Pixar, and you'll hear in a speech that he created a company called Next. So the combo between Apple, Pixar, Next kind of proves that he was an absolute beast, if you didn't already know that and make that assumption based off of what you've already heard about him. So without further ado, here is his commencement speech, and please be kind. Please bear with me, because I'm not the greatest reader of all time, so this is a little out of my comfort zone, but we're going to give it a go, and I hope you learn as much as I learned listening to these commencement speeches over and over throughout my entire short-lived business career to this point. So here we go. This is Steve Jobs talking. I never graduated from college. Truth be told, this is the closest I've ever gotten to a college graduation. Today I want to tell you three stories from my life. That's it. No big deal, just three stories. The first story is about connecting the dots. I dropped out of Reed College after the first 6 months, but then stayed around as a drop-in for another 18 months or so before I really quit. So why did I drop out? It started before I was born. My biological mother was a young, unwed college graduate student, and she decided to put me up for adoption. She felt very strongly that I should be adopted by college graduates, so everything was all set for me to be adopted at birth by a lawyer and his wife. Except that when I popped out, they decided at the last minute that they really wanted a girl. So my parents, who were on a waiting list, got a call in the middle of the night asking, "We have an unexpected baby boy. Do you want him?" They said, "Of course." My biological mother later found out that my mother had never graduated from college and that my father had never graduated from high school. She refused to sign the final adoption papers, She only relented a few months later when my parents promised that I would someday go to college. And 17 years later, I did go to college. But I naively chose a college that was almost as expensive as Stanford, and all of my working class parents' savings were being spent on my college tuition. After 6 months, I couldn't see the value in it. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life and no idea how college was going to help me figure it out. And here I was, spending all of my money and my parents' money that they saved their entire life. So I decided to drop out and trust that it would all work out okay. It was pretty scary at the time, but looking back, it was one of the best decisions I ever made. The minute I dropped out, I could stop taking the required classes that didn't interest me and begin dropping in on the ones that looked interesting. It wasn't all romantic. I didn't have a dorm room, so I slept on the floor in friends' rooms. I returned Coke bottles for the 5-cent deposits to buy food with. And I would walk the 7 miles across town every Sunday night to get one good meal a week at the Hare Krishna temple. I loved it. And much of what I stumbled into by following my curiosity and intuition turned out to be priceless later on. Let me give you one example. Reed College at the time offered perhaps the best calligraphy instruction in the country. Throughout the campus, every poster, every label, on every drawer was beautifully hand calligraphied. Because I had dropped out and didn't have to take the normal classes, I decided to take a calligraphy class to learn how to do this. I learned about serif and sans serif typefaces, about varying the amount of space between different letter combinations, about what makes great typography great. It was beautiful, historical, artistically subtle in a way that science can't capture, and I found it fascinating. None of this had even a hope of any practical application in my life. But 10 years later, when we were designing the first Macintosh computer, it all came back to me. And we designed it all into the Mac. It was the first computer with a beautiful typography. If I had never dropped in on that single course in college, the Mac would have never had multiple typefaces or proportionally spaced fonts. And since Windows just copied the Mac, it's likely that no personal computer would have them. If I had never dropped out, I would have never dropped in on this calligraphy class, and personal computers might not have the wonderful typography that they do now. Of course, it was impossible to connect the dots looking forward when I was in college, but it was very, very clear looking backward 10 years later. Again, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backward. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. This approach has never let me down, and it has made all the difference in my life. My second story is about love and loss. I was lucky. I found what I love to do early in life. Waz and I started Apple in my parents' garage when I was 20. Quick side note, this is Bobby speaking. Waz is Steve Wozniak, one of the founders of Apple. Okay, back to Steve. We worked hard, and in 10 years, Apple had grown from just the two of us in a garage into a $2 billion company with over 4,000 employees. We had just released our finest creation, the Macintosh, a year earlier, and I had just turned 30. And then I got fired. How can you get fired from a company you started? Well, as Apple grew, we hired someone who I thought was very talented to run the company with me. And for the first year or so, things went well. But then our visions of the future began to diverge, and eventually we had a falling out. When we did, our board of directors sided with him. So at 30, I was out. And very publicly out. What had been the focus of my entire adult life was gone. And it was devastating. I really didn't know what to do for a few months. I felt that I had let the previous generation of entrepreneurs down, that I had dropped the baton as it was being passed to me. I met with David Packard and Bob Noyce and tried to apologize for screwing up so badly. I was a very public failure and even thought about running away from the valley, but something slowly began to dawn on me. I still loved what I did. The turn of events at Apple had not changed that one bit. I'd been rejected, but I was still in love, and so I decided to start over. I didn't see it then, but it turned out that getting fired from Apple was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. The heaviness of being successful was replaced by the lightness of being a beginner again, less sure about everything. It freed me to enter one of the most creative periods of my life. During the next 5 years, I started a company named Next, another company named Pixar, and fell in love with an amazing woman who would become my wife. Pixar went on to create the world's first public animated feature film, Toy Story, and is now the most successful animation studio in the world. In a remarkable turn of events, Apple bought Next. I returned to Apple, and the technology we developed at Next is at the heart of Apple's current renaissance. And Loreen and I have a wonderful family together. I'm pretty sure none of this would have happened if I hadn't been fired from Apple. It was awful tasting medicine, but I guess the patient needed it. Sometimes life hits you in the head with a brick. Don't lose faith. I'm convinced that the only thing that kept me going was that I loved what I did. You've got to find what you love, and that is as true for your work as it is for your lovers. Your work is going to fill a large part of your life, and the only way to be truly satisfied is to do what you believe is great work. And the only way to do great work is to love what you do. If you haven't found it yet, keep looking. Don't settle. As with all matters of the heart, you'll know when you find it. And, like any great relationship, it just gets better and better as the years roll on. So keep looking until you find it. Don't settle. My third story is about death. And remember, guys, this is back in 2005. Oh, by the way, this is Bobby speaking. So he actually, for some context, had a run-in with pancreatic cancer back in 2005 and survived. And ultimately, that is unfortunately what took his life here a couple years ago. So just remember this is 2005, and now this is Steve again. My third story is about death. When I was 17, I read a quote that went something like this. If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right. It made an impression on me, and since then, for the past 33 years, I have looked in the mirror every morning and asked myself, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I am about to do today? And whenever the answer has been no, for too many days in a row, I know I need to change something. Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There's no reason not to follow your heart. About a year ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. I had a scan at 7:30 in the morning, and it clearly showed a tumor on my pancreas. I didn't even know what a pancreas was. The doctors told me this was almost certainly a type of cancer that is incurable, and that I should expect to live no longer than 3 to 6 months. My doctor advised me to go home and get my affairs in order, which is doctor's code for prepare for death. It means to try to tell your kids everything you thought you'd have the next 10 years to tell them in just a few months. It means to make sure everything is buttoned up so that it will be as easy as possible for your family. It means to say your goodbyes. I live with that diagnosis all day. Later that evening, I had a biopsy where they stuck an endoscopy down my throat, through my stomach, and into my intestines, put a needle into my pancreas, and got a few cells from the tumor. I was sedated, but my wife, who was there, told me that when they viewed the cells under a microscope, the doctor started crying because it turned out to be a very rare form of pancreatic cancer that is curable with surgery. I had the surgery, and I'm fine now. This was the closest I've been to facing death, and I hope it's the closest I get for a few more decades. Having lived through it, I can now say this to you with a bit more certainty than when death was a useful but purely intellectual concept. No one wants to die. Even people who want to go to heaven don't want to die to get there. And yet death is the destination we all share. No one has ever escaped it. And that is as it should be, because death is very likely the single best invention of life. It is life's change agent. It clears out the old to make way for the new. Right now, the new is you. But someday, not too long from now, you will gradually become the old and be cleared away. Sorry to be so dramatic, but it's quite true. Your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. And most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow already know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary. When I was young, there was an amazing publication called The Whole Earth Catalog, which was one of the Bibles of my generation. It was created by a fellow named Stuart Brand, not far from here in Menlo Park. And he brought it to life with his poetic touch. This was in the late 1960s, before personal computers and desktop publishing. So it was all made with typewriters, scissors, and Polaroid cameras. It was sort of like Google in paperback form, 35 years before Google came along. It was idealistic and overflowing with neat tools and great notions. Stuart and his team put out several issues of the Whole Earth Catalog, and then when it had run its course, they put out a final issue. It was the mid-1970s, and I was young. Well, more specifically, this is Bobby speaking. He was in his early 20s. So, same age as all of you young professionals and college students out there. Back to Steve. On the back cover of this final issue was a photograph of an early morning country road, the kind you might find yourself hitchhiking on if you were so adventurous. Beneath it were the words, "Stay hungry, stay foolish." It was their farewell message as they signed off. Stay hungry, stay foolish. And I've always wished that for myself. And now, as you graduate, begin anew. I wish that for all of you. I wish for all of you to begin anew. Stay hungry and stay foolish. That is a very deep, deep commencement speech. And this is Bobby speaking again. And I'm sure I don't do any justice after something like that. But I think it's so important to really hit home on the fact that Steve, and I'm not on a first name basis with old Steve-O, but Steve Jobs, the greatest, one of the greatest of all times, his biggest point that he makes over and over is you have to have the ability to fail. And you have to willingly try, and you have to willingly pursue your passion, and you can't give up. And you're going to see over these next two commencements speeches by also Conan O'Brien and Denzel Washington, that is the trend in the ultra-successful world. The people that are truly happy, the people that are truly enjoying their work, and not only receiving the benefit through joy and love, but also financial benefits, they're individuals that have willingly failed over and over again, but continue to push forward. So, without further ado, let's jump in to Conan O'Brien's. Here's Conan. Here we go. 11 years ago, I gave an address to a graduating class at Harvard. I have not spoken at a graduation since because I thought I had nothing left to say. But then, 2010 came, and now I'm here, 3,000 miles from my home, because I learned a hard but profound lesson last year, and I'd like to share it with you. In 2000, I told graduates, don't be afraid to fail. Well, now I'm here to tell you that, though you should not fear failure, you should do your very best to avoid it. One man famously said, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But what he failed to stress is that it almost kills you. Disappointment stings, and for driven, successful people like yourselves, it's disorienting. What this man should have said is whatever doesn't kill you makes you watch a lot of Cartoon Network and drink mid-price Chardonnay at 11 in the morning. Now, by definition, commencement speakers at an Ivy League college are considered successful. But a little over a year ago, I experienced a profound and very public disappointment. I did not get what I wanted, and I left a system that had nurtured and helped define me for the better part of 17 years. I went from being in the center of the grid to not only off the grid, but underneath the coffee table that the grid sits on, lost in the shag carpeting that is underneath the coffee table supporting the grid. It was the making of a career disaster and a terrible analogy. But then something spectacular happened. Fogbound, with no compass, and adrift, I started trying things. I grew a strange cinnamon beard. I dove into the world of social media, and I started tweeting my comedy. I threw together a national tour. I played the guitar, I did stand-up, wore a skin-tight blue leather suit, recorded an album, made a documentary, and frightened my friends and family. Ultimately, I abandoned all preconceived perceptions of my career path and stature and took a job on basic cable with a network most famous for showing reruns, along with sitcoms created by a tall, black man who dresses like an old black woman. I did a lot of silly, unconventional, spontaneous, and seemingly irrational things, and guess what? With the exception of the blue leather suit, it was the most satisfying and fascinating year of my professional life. To this day, I still don't understand exactly what happened, but I have never had more fun, been more challenged, and, this is important, had more conviction about what I was doing. How could this be true? Well, it's simple. There are few things more liberating in life than having your worst fear realized. I went to college with many people who prided themselves on knowing exactly who they were and exactly where they were going. At Harvard, five different guys in my class told me that they would one day be president of the United States. Four of them were later killed in motel shootouts. The other one briefly hosted Blue's Clues before dying senselessly in yet another motel shootout. Your path at 22 will not necessarily be your path at 32 or 42. One's dream is constantly evolving, rising and falling, changing course. This happens in every job. But because I have worked in comedy for 25 years, I can probably speak best about my own profession. Way back in the 1940s, there was a very, very funny man named Jack Benny. He was a giant star, easily one of the greatest comedians of his generation, and a much younger man named Johnny Carson. And this Johnny Carson wanted very much to be Jack Benny. In some ways he was, but in many ways he wasn't. He emulated Jack Benny, but his own quirks and mannerisms, along with a changing medium, pulled him in a different direction. And yet his failure to completely become his hero made him the funniest person of his generation. David Letterman wanted to be Johnny Carson, and was not. And as a result, my generation of comedians wanted to be David Letterman, and none of us are. My peers and I have all missed that mark in a thousand different ways. But the point is this, it is our failure to become our perceived ideal that ultimately defines us and makes us unique. It's not easy, but if you accept your misfortune and handle it right, your perceived failure can become a catalyst for profound reinvention. So at the age of 47, after 25 years of obsessively pursuing my dream, that dream changed. For decades in show business, the ultimate goal of every comedian was to host The Tonight Show. It was the Holy Grail. And like many people, I thought that achieving that goal would define me as successful. But that is not true. No specific job or career goal defines me, and it should not define you. In 2000, I told graduates to not be afraid to fail, and I still believe that. But today I tell you that whether you fear it or not, disappointment will come. The beauty is that through disappointment, you gain clarity. And with clarity comes conviction and true originality. Many of you here today are getting your diploma at this Ivy League school because you have committed yourself to a dream and worked hard to achieve it. And there is no greater cliche in a commencement address than follow your dream. While I'm here to tell you that whatever you think your dream is now, it will probably change. And that's okay. 4 years ago, many of you had a specific vision of what your college experience was going to be and who you were going to become. And I bet today, most of you would admit that your time here was very different from what you imagined. But through the good, and especially the bad, the person you are now is someone you could never have conjured 4 years ago. This is Bobby speaking again. Here we go. Common trend once again. Conan pretty much hits home over and over that failure was the biggest part of his story. And actually taking that risk and putting himself out there to fail taught him unbelievable things. I mean, it's just proof. The proof is in the pudding, as they always say. It's just incredible to see in so many different industries, you have to put yourself out there if you really want to do something special. And I could talk about it all day, but I can't say it in a way that they say it, so let's just hop into the next one. So the very last speech is from Denzel Washington. And I just want you guys to hang in there. If you guys don't like this little subtle random podcast that we've thrown in here after several weeks of interviewing guests, we apologize, but let us know what you think. Comment on it. And I know I'm interrupting our podcast to do a little plug, but just hang in there and let us know what you think at the end. So without further ado, here is Denzel, played by Bobby Mason. I found that nothing in life is worthwhile unless you take risks. Nothing. Nelson Mandela said, "There is no passion to be found playing small and settling for a life that's less than the one you're capable of living." I'm sure in your experiences in school and applying to college and picking your major and deciding what you want to do with life, people have told you to make sure you have something to fall back on. Make sure you got something to fall back on, honey. But I never understood that concept, having something to fall back on. If I'm going to fall, I don't want to fall back on anything except my faith. I want to fall forward. At least I figure that the way I see it, if I'm about to fall forward, at least I'll be able to see what I'm going to hit. So I think my best advice is fall forward. Here's what I mean. Reggie Jackson struck out 2,600 times in his career, the most in the history of baseball. But you don't hear about the strikeouts. People remember the home runs. Fall forward. Thomas Edison conducted 1,000 failed experiments. Did you know that? I didn't either, because 1,001 was the light bulb. Fall forward. Every failed experiment is one step closer to success. You've got to take risks, and I'm sure you've probably heard that before. But I want to talk about why it's so important. I've got three reasons. First, you will fail at some point in your life. Accept it. You will lose. You will embarrass yourself. You will suck at something. There's no doubt about it. That's probably not a traditional message for a graduation ceremony. But hey, I'm telling you, embrace it, because it's inevitable. And I should know, in the acting business, you fail all the time. Early in my career, I auditioned for a part in a Broadway musical. A perfect role for me, I thought, except for the fact that I can't sing. So I'm in the wings. I'm about to go on stage, but the guy in front of me is singing like the greatest singer I ever heard, and I'm just shrinking, getting smaller and smaller. So I come out with my little sheet music, and it was Just My Imagination by The Temptations. And that's what I came up with. So I hand it over, and the person looks at it, and then looks at me, and looks at the director. So I start to sing, and they're not saying anything. I think I must be getting better, so I start getting into it. But after the first verse, the director cuts me off. "Thank you. Thank you very much. You'll be hearing from me," he says. I didn't get the job. But here's the thing. I didn't quit. I didn't fall back. I walked out of there to prepare for the next audition, and the next audition, and the next one. I prayed, and I prayed, but I continued to fail, and failed, and failed. But it didn't matter, because you know what? There's an old saying, you hang around a barbershop long enough, sooner or later you'll get a haircut. So the same is with life. You will catch your break, and I did catch a break. Last year, I did a play called Fences on Broadway, and I won a Tony Award. And I didn't have to sing for it, by the way. And here's the kicker. It was at the Court Theater, the same theater where I failed that first audition 30 years prior. The point is, and I will pick up the pace here, the point is every graduate here today has the training and talent to succeed. Here's my second point about failure. If you don't fail, you're not even trying. My wife told me this great expression. To get something you never had, you have to do something you never did. Les Brown, a motivational speaker, made an analogy about this. He says, imagine you're on your deathbed, and standing around your bed are the ghosts representing your unfilled potential. The ghosts of the ideas you never acted on. The ghosts of the talents you didn't use. And they're standing around your bed angry, disappointed, upset. They say, we came to you because you could have brought us to your life. They say, and now we have to go to the grave together. So I ask you today, how many ghosts are going to be around your bed when your time comes? You invested a lot into your education, and people have invested in you. And let me tell you, the world needs your talents. So you got to get out there. You got to give it everything you've got. Whether it's your time, your talent, your prayers, or your treasures. Because remember this, you'll never see a U-Haul behind a hearse. You can't take it with you. So the question, what are you going to do with what you have? Some of you are business majors. Some of you are theologians, nurses, sociologists. Some of you have money. Some of you have patience. Some of you have kindness. Some of you have love. Some of you have the gift of long-suffering. Whatever it is, whatever your gift, what are you going to do with what you have? Now here's my last point about failure. Sometimes it's the best way to figure out where you're going. Your life will never be a straight path. I began at Fordham University as a pre-med student. I took a course called Cardiac Morphogenesis. I couldn't say it, and I still can't. Then I decided to go to pre-law, then journalism, and with no academic focus, my grades took off in their own direction, down. I was a 1.8 GPA one semester, and the university very politely suggested that it might be better to take some time off. I was 20 years old, and I was at my lowest point. And then one day, I remember the exact day, March 27th, 1975, I was helping my mother in her beauty shop. My mother owned a beauty shop up in Mount Vernon. There was this older woman who was considered one of the elders in the town. I didn't know her personally, but I was looking in the mirror. And every time I looked in the mirror, I could see her behind me and she was staring at me. Every time I looked at her, she kept giving me these strange looks. She finally took the dryer off her head and said something to me I'll never forget. First of all, she said, somebody give me a piece of paper. She then said, young boy, I have a spiritual prophecy. You are going to travel the world and speak to millions of people. Like a wise ass, I'm thinking to myself, does she got anything in that crystal ball about me getting back to college in the fall? But maybe she was on to something, because later that summer, while working as a counselor at the YMCA camp in Connecticut, we put on a talent show for campers. After the show, another counselor came up to me and asked, have you ever thought of acting? You should. You're good at that. When I got back to Fordham that fall, I changed my major once again, for the last time. And in the years that followed, just as that woman prophesied, I have traveled the world and I've spoken to millions of people through my movies. Millions who, up till today, I couldn't see while I was talking to them. But I do see you today, and I'm encouraged by what I see. I'm strengthened by what I see. I love what I see. Let me conclude with one final point. Many years ago, I did this movie called Philadelphia. Philadelphia came out in 1993. It's about a man played by Tom Hanks, who's fired from his law firm because he has AIDS. He wants to sue the firm, but no one's willing to represent him until a homophobic, ambulance-chasing lawyer, played by yours truly, takes on the case. In a way, if you watch the movie, you'll see everything I'm talking about today. You'll see what I mean about taking risks or being willing to fail. Because taking risk is not just about going for a job. It's also about knowing what you know and what you don't know. It's about being open to people and to ideas. Over the course of the film, the character I play begins to take small steps, small risks. He very, very, very slowly begins to overcome his fears. And I feel ultimately his heart becomes flooded with love. Take risks and open up to life. Accept new views and be open to new opinions. Be willing to speak at a commencement at one of the country's best universities, even though you're scared stiff. Because the chances you take, the people you meet, the people you love, the faith that you have, that's what's going to define your life. Never be discouraged. Never hold back. Give everything you've got. And when you fall throughout life, remember this. Fall forward. Those were three incredible commencement speeches. This is obviously Bobby speaking again. Those are my favorites, and we'll put them in the show notes so you guys can listen to the entire thing. I highly recommend it. And I'm sorry if you feel like we cheated you this week by straight up reading other people's content, but their stuff is just way too valuable not to share with the world. And so, like always, thank you for hanging in there. Make sure this week, I'm going to come up with a life hack for you. Fail at one thing. This week, make sure you fail at one specific thing. And you know what? If you go out there and you try to fail and you make something work, good freaking job. Because that's exactly what all of us want. Because if you try to fail, that means you're trying something new. And I know it's uncomfortable, but when you try something new, it's the only way you can grow. So this week, try to grow. Try to fail. Try to do something you've never done before. And like always, thank you for listening to Master the Start. We can't wait for you to come back next week because I'm pretty pumped. Honestly, here's another little plug. I am pumped for who we have on the show next week. I'm not going to give it away, but she's an absolute incredible youngster that's doing a ton in the business world. So thanks again for joining us this week on Master the Start. Don't forget to visit us on our Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn pages. And we'll see you next week.